Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Davidson Hang podcast. I'm excited to introduce to you John Kenny, who is the founder of Interpersonal Relationship Coaching. He's a speaker, an author, and a documentary maker. And yeah, I'm excited to. And you're also known as the relationship guy. That's a pretty awesome title. I would I think we all need a relationship guy in our corner.
Hello, Davidson. Thanks for having me. I've had so many times that people have said, I want to take you home with me, or wish you could be in my pocket or sitting on my shoulder, or something like that, so, to help them through the times when the thought of things come up when we're not speaking. So, I think it would always be good to have someone on hand if you could just say, can we have a little bit of input on this, please?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, right? I think in the middle of a pandemic and... You know, I think relationships are top of mind more than ever. I think a lot of us could distract ourselves by doing things, going to the bar, having a drink with our friends, but being able to almost being forced by the world to kind of sit with yourself and sit with your partner, I think it's bringing up a lot for people.
Yeah, most definitely. I think, like you said, there's two sides of that. You're either being forced to spend a lot more time with people in your relationships, or you're being forced to spend a lot more time on your own, which kind of then you get all those thoughts that go around in your head about your relationships or lack of relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know, especially in Manhattan, when I was living in Manhattan, I think the number one thing that people, when I met people, would be that, hey, you know, I'm having trouble. I can't find any good guys. You know, it seems like I'm always attracted to the bad ones or the ones that I don't want to commit. It's interesting when you hear that, you know.
Yeah, that's where my expertise comes in, because I can help people to go, well, why is that happening? Why are you attracted to a certain type of person? Why are those certain types of people attracted to you? Why do you, again, that's a belief, isn't it? They're immediately, what they're telling you is what they believe. There's no good guys left. And if they go around with that in their head, unfortunately, they're going to keep attracting the not good guys.
Yeah, it's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? It's like, if that's what you're going to see, that's what you're seeking. This is corny, but I truly believe in the law of attraction, right? What you put out there is what you receive. So if you come from a place of scarcity, you know, that you're going to find evidence of that. Whereas if you have more of an abundant mindset, you know, you're able to attract that type of person in your life.
Yeah, it was, I think it was Buddha, was like 2,500 years ago, said, what you think you create. So yeah, very much of what you just said.
Well, let's take a step back and go and get into why you became a relationship coach. I know we were catching up the other day, and you know, I think you have a pretty compelling story, and you know, I think it definitely resonates with a lot of people. So, would love to hear, you know, why you got into the world of counseling and then coaching. But yeah, I see that you have a ton of experience, so it's good to come from that background because you have a different perspective as well.
Yeah. So I trained as a counselor. I've had a varied career. Never really knew what I wanted to do when I was a kid. Never really knew what I wanted to do right up until I was in my sort of mid-30s, really. And then did a bit of psychology training and found it really interesting. Decided to train as a counselor. This was back in 2004. So I did my counseling training and worked with people as a counselor. And then I met a coach in 2012, and they were, we had a chat at some networking event, and they offered me some sessions because we had a chat, and they said, well, there's clearly some things you need to maybe look at. And they just said to me, well, why is your life still stuck if you're helping all these people with your therapy? And that's when I got turned on to coaching, because it made me realize that even though I was helping lots of people, what I was actually doing was getting them to a certain space, which is the sort of kind of space I was in, where I can completely understand where I was, but it wasn't enough to change my life. And then working with this coach was able to enabled me to see that actually I can tell myself a completely different story, and I can start to live a more of a life that I wanted to live. And I was sort of 40, 41 by that point. And so then I thought, well, Gracie's great. So then I decided to train as a coach and implement that into my counseling practice. Mm. And then in 2016, I decided to move away from counseling altogether and just focus on the coaching. That's when I put the interpersonal relationship coaching stuff together. So I've trained as a counselor, then a coach, then a hypnotherapist, NLP practitioner, and I fused all the things together that I thought were useful as far as those approaches were concerned, but also my own experience of having disastrous relationships one after the other and self-sabotaging everything that good that came into my life. And so I also put a lot of sort of personal experience in there as well.
Why don't you explain to people who aren't as familiar with what the difference is between counseling and coaching? Because I think there's a gray area sometimes, and it sounds like you're able to incorporate all of the various trainings, but people have a clear differentiation between the two.
So in a basic level, I would say that counseling is more about, it's very client-led, although coaching is very client-led. There's a lot more input on the coaching side of things. So there's a lot more exploration, I think, that goes on about what you could do to put things right. Whereas with the counseling, it's more that the client processes everything themselves. So they talk about their stuff. You may feedback sometimes, give them something to maybe to consider, but it's about the client coming to their own answers through the therapy. And there's a lot of sort of sitting with the emotions, and I found it quite slow and quite a little bit repetitive. Some people, that's all they need. They need to come to talk to someone. That offloading is all they need to get the therapeutic benefit from counseling. But I started to incorporate my coaching because what happened with me is I completely understood where I came from. I knew what my story was. I knew why I felt the way that I did, but I hadn't done anything about it. Because I didn't know that I could. I just thought, well, this is my lot. This is how I feel. This is how I feel because of this, this, and this. This is how I react to certain things. And then this person said, well, you don't have to do that. And it didn't really kind of hit me until I had my own coaching that I could change my story. And that's what I moved away from the counseling for, is because I was helping people, but they were getting to a certain point and then they were going away, but then they might come back. And because there was no definitive change that was happening. So I wanted to try and help people to actually sit there and say, this is how my life is now going to be different.
Gotcha. I love what you said about the changing the script and being more proactive, it sounds like, versus like the internal, which is nothing wrong. I think we all have to start with the internal processing, but then, like you said, you get to a point where, if the pattern keeps repeating, then, you know, there needs to be action too, right? Processing is one thing, but then action is the other half of the battle, right? If you know, it's like reading a book, it's like, yes, you can read the book, but, you know, starting your own business or doing the actual thing, you know, oftentimes will get you to that next step or the next stage.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of resistance when it comes to getting to that next stage, because we get so used to being in a certain space, and then when we try and change that space, it can be very uncomfortable. And then the resistance, procrastination, and the ease of staying the same comes in. And I think with the coaching, it's a lot easier to help people to progress past that point than it is with the counseling therapy I used to do.
That's a good differentiation. I know I've done therapy on and off for 6 years or so, and I think the first 3 years, I definitely noticed myself like still being stuck in the pattern. Like I was still bitter about my dad. Like it helped me like have some appreciation for him, you know, but I never called him, you know, I never reached out to kind of like make amends. Right. Whereas like when I went through coaching, you know, it was very like, hey, you have to call him, you have to pick up, like, you can't just deal with it internally. Like there's another human being at the other side of things. So, you know, when I finally went into coaching, I called up every single person I've ever had a falling out with. And that was actually what got me to like a place now where I can get married this week, right? You know, if I didn't do the actual calling, I don't know if I would necessarily be in a in the right mindset to be able to get married and forgive my dad and stuff like that.
Yeah. Firstly, congratulations on the marriage.
Thank you.
Many years of happiness. Secondly, you're right. I mean, I didn't put my demons to bed really until I made those connections and I reached out. Some of those responses that I got weren't helpful, but it enabled me to kind of say, okay, this is where they are. This is where I am. I can now put that to bed. I may not like it very much. I may not be very happy with the reaction that I got, but at least I know where they are and I know the depth of the repair that can happen in those relationships. And that was good for me to kind of get that closure and kind of work on my own head space to say, okay, this is how it is. This is how I feel about it. I'm not going to get from them what I really need, but I can be okay with that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like being okay, like not being attached to what you think they're going to react. Cause I think we all have expectations on, oh, they're going to be happy that I remember one of my ex-girlfriends, I reached out to apologize for me being like a dick, quite frankly. And she was like, it seems very scripted what you're saying. Like you practice this, like, you know, I want to hear more like authenticity. So I was like, whoa, like didn't expect that. But I paused and I apologized and I said, you're right. You know, like, and then I was able to be a bit more authentic and be more vulnerable. And then she was like, okay, like I hear you, you know. But yeah, I remember the first time at that response, like I was like, whoa, didn't see that one coming.
But that's good also, isn't it? Because it took you into a genuine space. It took you out of the what you thought you wanted to say into a space of what you really needed to say.
Yeah.
In order to make the repair within that relationship as good as it could be.
Yeah.
So it was good that she did in a way that she challenged you on that, because obviously she needed some kind of closure from that as well.
Right.
In the right way.
Right. I mean, I would love to, I saw that you also are a certified DISS assessment. And like, how did you go about that? Cause I do think that is one of the more common assessors out there.
Yeah, so I did a little bit of training with one of the coaching establishments here in the UK, and they were offering a DISC profiling training. So I looked into the DISC, and I thought it was really interesting. So I decided to train as a profiler myself. The main reason, I mean, it's really useful when you work with clients, because if you know what their most preferred way of being is, it helps you to kind of tailor the coaching a little bit, know what might motivate them, know what are they going to be enthused about, and how they work. So you can use that profile to help them with their, not only with their personal coaching moving on, but it also helps you to understand how they see themselves. So what kind of person they are in certain scenarios. So how do they behave in front of other people? How do they want to be seen? How do they see themselves? How do they react under stress? So we can understand when they're being triggered, what kind of parts of their personality come through. And then if that's not a healthy space for them to go into, then we can sort of see if we can get some kind of authentic and congruent balance. So all of the charts that they get from doing the profile then marry up to try to get it to be as much the same as possible. So that in every situation that they're in, they're as being authentic as they possibly can. And then once you're in an authentic space, you feel much more confident. You feel much more at ease with yourself. And you don't feel like you need to wear too many masks or there's too much pressure on you to be something that you don't really want to be.
That's interesting. Do you notice that you attract a certain DISC profile that typically come to you, or is it pretty, does it range a lot?
So since I've been working more with sort of the high achieving people, there's a lot more dominant personalities that come through because they've pushed themselves. They're very task oriented. So they work a lot on getting results. And so therefore, but that might not be their authentic self. So they might be slightly forced into doing that because they feel that's their driver to be successful. But I think like attracts like, so I do get a fair few influence. So the DISC is a dominant influencer, compliant and steady, or steady and compliant. Basically the influencer and the steady type person are more people oriented, and the dominant and the compliant people are more task oriented. So being an influencer myself, so I'm in the fairly high I person as a coach. I think a lot of coaches are quite high I because we do like to influence people and help them to change their lives. So I do have a tendency to have a fair few influencers I also connect to. But since I've moved into a specific field, then it's quite a lot of dominant people. But also stepping away from that, because I deal with a lot of people that come from difficult spaces in their past, you know, there is a variety, but there are also these, like, I get a lot of people that are in the steady camp because that's where a lot of people pleasing kind of behavior comes from.
Yeah.
It's trying to make sure that everybody's happy. And again, we do address that in the coaching. Is that a healthy space for you to be in, or is that driving you to always put the needs of someone else first? So it's a great tool to use as far as helping someone to understand themselves.
Yeah, I think it having self-awareness is so important. I think that's why so many of us are interested in like the Myers-Briggs type assessor and things like that. But it's, I hear a lot of people after they read one of those, I feel like they only focus on the negative parts, right? And not, or what they perceive to be like the downfalls instead of like the positive aspects of that as well. Because ultimately all of these types of assessments also have positive traits as well. But when I speak with people and what'd you think after reading it? They're like, they only focus on the negative part. It's interesting.
Yeah I think our brain is negatively biased, and we, unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there that just have a tendency to pick holes in themselves. But like you said, within that profile, it's what works. What are you doing right now? What kind of person are you right now that works for you? So let's enhance those strengths, and let's see if we can negate some of those negative traits as well and get rid of those.
I'm curious, you know, in the middle of the pandemic, right, like we were talking about, like being what people that are, because I often hear, I'm not sure people are using the pandemic as like an excuse almost, but they're like, oh, like I would never be able to like see people now. Like, you know, so a lot of, you know, when I catch up with people, I'm like, oh, like, how's everything going on? You know, and they're like, oh, you know, like I haven't talked to anyone in, you know, this long. And it's like, oh, that's interesting. You know, I guess like, what are your thoughts on, because I often view the pandemic as of something that's actually bringing out what's already in us, but it's, you know, now we have, it's magnified what's our internal thoughts and things like that. And I think it's bringing it to the forefront because we can't distract ourselves as much by like going out, right? So, you know, we have more time to be with our thoughts and emotions more often.
Yeah, I think there's such a broad spectrum of the impacts that this is having on people. One of my friends is quite introverted. And they said, this is a fantastic time for introverts because I don't have to do anything I don't want to do. I can just say, no, I can't do that because of the pandemic. We've got a tiered system here at the moment. They've just gone into a tier, which again means they can't see people. And they sent me a message the other day saying, I'm in the next tier up. I don't have to go out again. So they were super happy. But everybody's going to deal with it really differently because it is a massive change of lifestyle.
Yeah.
And if you are in a healthy, happy relationship, then hopefully this is kind of highlighted that and helped it to be even healthier because there's even more closeness and connection. If you're in a toxic and unhealthy space, it's going to have highlighted a lot more of the difficulties. It depends if you've had to spend time with those people or whether you haven't had to spend time, because I've had a lot of people that I've been working with and it's given them the break that they needed from these relationships in order to manage to sort themselves out because the influence hasn't been there from the outside. Whereas other people have been locked down in these toxic relationships, and it made it much more difficult because they don't even get the space to be able to kind of reflect and be in their own headspace to be able to manage those relationships, and the toxicity is just built and built and built. So it's been a very mixed bag.
I also feel like when we're mean to our partners, whoever, you know, our spouse or whoever we're dating, I think a lot of times we don't realize that we don't take responsibility for our portion of it, right? It's like, well, they make me feel this way, or they, or he or she, you know, triggered me or whatever. But it's rare to see a person take responsibility, and it's like, oh, I actually have the awareness. Well, because of, you know, my parents are divorced, maybe I'm bringing some of that with me to my existing relationships.
Yeah, that we do. We do. And again, you're right. We're not taught to take responsibility though. When we're kids, we're kind of blamed. So stop making me feel like that. You're making me feel like that. And you don't learn that as a child. Your parent doesn't sort of say, well, I know, you know, you're misbehaving, but this is my stuff. And, you know, I'm sorry I shouted at you, but this is, you triggered me and I need to deal with that. We don't generally get that because there aren't that many sort of people around that are that self-aware, as you said, that can say this is my stuff, not their stuff. And we do pass responsibility for our emotions on to the people around us all the time. You make me feel this way, you did this, now I, you know, and it's a lot of accusatory language rather than saying, okay, I don't like it when you do that, because when you do that I feel this way, so please don't do that because I don't want to feel like this. It might be that is a trigger from the past and you can manage that within yourself, but then what we want is for the person that you're with to be able to go, okay, well, if you don't like that, I'll try not to do that, and I'll try and help you through that, so that isn't triggered inside of you. But as you said, it's for us to be able to say, okay, that's my trigger, I am responsible for how I feel. No one's responsible for my emotions. I am responsible for my own emotions, and I can choose how I feel about that. But, you know, as you said earlier on about your father and stuff, we know there are going to be certain things that you've experienced growing up, which are deeply entrenched in our brains, and someone will do something similar. I can use an example actually for myself, which I only really kind of figured out properly last week. So when I was a kid, and I've written about it in my book, my father took no responsibility for his behavior. And I always felt, no matter how bad his behavior was, I was always the one that had to apologize to keep the peace. Now, when I do my talks and stuff, I've spoken about road rage. So I've lost my temper before when someone's cut me up or whatever it was. I thought I was being disrespected. So when I've spoken about this before, I've said, oh, I had my disrespect from being a child was triggered. I felt they were disrespecting me, so I would lose my temper. But actually what I realized was I had an incident a couple of weeks ago and someone cut me up and they completely nearly sort of took the front of my car off. And then they gave me a rude sign out of the window when I bibbed them up. And I kind of had to keep on top of my emotions. Then I realized actually it isn't about disrespect. It was the fact that I always had to be the one that apologized even when I was in the wrong.
Yeah.
So that was triggered with me, because when someone says sorry or thank you or whatever in a car and they do something a bit silly and then I have, you know, kind of react to that. If they just say sorry, I'm fine.
Yeah.
But if they don't say sorry, or if they give me rude signs out of the window, I kind of really have to try and keep on top of my feelings. And that trigger comes from my childhood, when I always felt that I needed to apologize, even though I was in the right. But if I wanted to keep the peace within my house, I had to acquiesce and do what my dad needed me to do, which was to make him feel better. And that's stuff that I've carried. And even as a coach and a therapist, that only really made sense to me like a couple of weeks ago. But it was really interesting to kind of go, okay, now when I go out next time and that happens in the car, hopefully now that I've realized what my trigger is, if it happens again, I can go, not a problem, because I've now put to bed or worked through or understood what the reason was behind that.
Yeah, I love what that's really good awareness. I love what you're mentioning about the work never stops, right? I think a lot of us think, you know, it's like, and then I love what you said about the power dynamic too, because I do think in many societies, parents have such a strong power thing that, you know, whatever they say is just what is true, right? And as a child, like you're taught to just listen and not really talk back. I mean, especially in Asian culture, right? You talk back to your parents, like they'll beat the living out of you. Like,
Same with the culture I grew up in, the family I grew up in.
oh yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because I think our society is getting better right now. Like if you actually beat your child, like, you know, there's probably some consequences. But you know, at least in Asian culture, I still know many of my friends that were also like beaten like to a pulp, like if they ever like said anything to challenge their parents, you know. It's interesting how that works.
Yeah, like you said, it's just passed down from generation to generation. That, you know, I've, have you heard, I would give you the phrase that children should be seen and not heard. You know, and if we were heard, it was generally with a clout around the head or a I'll give you something to cry about if you don't stop crying kind of thing. You know, you're standing there crying because you're upset, and then you get a clout because you're crying.
Right. And then they're also making the crying like a bad thing. It's like it's letting them just process it and not make it's neutral. It's just it is what it is. They're making it like no, like you shouldn't cry, but it's like sometimes you need a good cry, you know?
Yeah, you see it so often. I mean, especially when I was doing my couples work, is someone would get upset and the other person would go, oh, don't cry. And I go, no, it's fine, let them cry if they need to cry. If that's how they feel, then they just need to let that go. But it's again, we generally find people crying or dealing with emotions quite uncomfortable. And just being able to sit with that and let the other person express themselves in the way that they need to is sometimes really difficult for us to do. So again, that's that part of that self-awareness again, isn't it? Go, okay, this isn't something I need to deal with. I don't need to feel uncomfortable. I just need to let this person be how they need to be. But again, we're not taught to do that.
Yeah, I think our society, like a lot of people are just taught to like, you know, they label emotions like negative or bad instead of like it's just part of the human experience, you know. Like even anger, like if you're never able to express any anger, it's just gonna keep building up and then eventually it's gonna explode like a volcano, right? Instead of just having more moderate places to process these so it doesn't have to get to a point where, you know, it gets to a point where you just can't handle it anymore.
That's right. Yeah, I like to look at anger as because there's kind of a primary and secondary emotion. I always find that anger seems to come from somewhere else. So it's generally as a result of pain. But again, if that pain builds up, the anger is going to build up on the inside, the frustration, the resentment, whatever it might be, will build up. And then it's expressed as anger because you're fine. I think that most people are comfortable with anger, expressing themselves angrily, but they're not really comfortable with expressing themselves sadly. So, you know what, that makes me really sad. They'll say, well, that makes me angry. But what they're really saying is, I don't really like that. And this is how I'm going to tell you, but it's making me angry. But actually, what they're really saying is, I don't like that. It makes me sad, or whatever it might be that you're dealing with that emotion. But then we become comfortable with us expressing ourselves in a certain way. And anger might be the way that we've become comfortable in letting those emotions go, rather than actually really addressing what the problem is.
This is a deep topic. What are your thoughts? I mean, this is probably a really hard topic to talk about, but being men being able to have avenues where we can express our emotions, because I do think even in 2020, it's taboo for men to cry or even express a lot of emotions, right? I mean, the only emotion we're allowed to express, I feel like, is anger, and that sometimes looks like through professional sports, you know, boxing, MMA, football, you know, a lot of any sports that has physical contact. But I sometimes think that's probably not the most healthy way to express it because there's always injuries and, you know, people can die from having concussions and stuff like that.
I completely agree. There has been seen mostly especially in sort of the Western society.
Yeah.
That big boys don't cry, kind of thing. So, and we're always told that as kids, you know, don't cry, get a grip, stop being a pansy or a girl or, you know, whatever it might be. And you're not freely allowed to express what's going on for you. And, you know, toughen up, that kind of thing. You know, and like you said, we're taught to express ourselves. If you're being bullied, like, fight back. You know, okay, that's not an unreasonable thing to do, but actually it's probably better to center yourself and not allow the bully to, because people bully for a specific reason. And if the bully doesn't get their needs met, they can't bully you because, you know, they're not able to get what they need from you. So it's more about learning how to be in your own space and manage your own feelings so that maybe the people around you aren't able to get the reaction out of you that they're looking for in order for them to get their needs met. But yeah, I mean, it is important that we are, again, we come back to self-awareness. It's important that we are able to say, I feel this way. And I feel this way because of this reason. And I'm allowed to express that if it's a reasonable thing for you to be able to do. Again, what I suppose said earlier on is if you can manage that emotion within yourself and it doesn't need to come out to cause too many problems, then it's a good way to manage that. But it doesn't mean that you don't express your thoughts maybe about it. You know, if you do something that I don't like, it's okay for me to say, hey, Davidson, please don't do that. I don't like it.
Right.
But if I can manage the emotion that brings up with me and myself, then obviously that gives me a lot more emotional control and a lot more emotional freedom. But it doesn't mean that I don't say to you, look, I don't like that. Yeah. Because if you then keep doing it, I know exactly where I stand with you, right? If I say I don't like it when you do that and you don't try to stop it, then I know that you can't perhaps or won't step into that space to help me out with that. And that gives me a good idea about then where our relationship is and how much you can prioritize the things that I need. And again, especially with intimate relationships, it's really important that we are able to step into someone else's space and say, okay, what do they need from me? There's a line that we need to draw when it comes to people pleasing, which is a completely different topic entirely. But I think it's Tony Robbins says we need to do it because we want to, not because we have to. And if I value you enough, then it's a nice thing for me to put your emotions first.
Yeah, I like what you said. It sounds like everything's a choice, right? I think sometimes we double down on, well, that's just how I've been, like that's just how I am. And there's not an ability to adapt and change, right? It's just like, well, I've just been like this my whole life. Or, you know, they bring it on or their parents. Cause I do think a lot of it's passed down to generation, like you said. It's passed down through the grandparents or even before that, you know, it's like, so where do we draw the line? Where do we stop it and try to, you know, disrupt the pattern and then not let it carry on to our kids, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, I work with some people and they've made that choice for themselves. They said, I'm not going to be the person that my parent was. I'm going to do it this way.
Yeah.
Generally when they're coming to see me is because they've taken it too far the other way. And they become far too whatever it is, the opposite. And that's causing the problems. But there are other people that are still bringing that behavior in that they've learned from their parents and it's affected them in a certain way. And now they're continuing the same cycle. And it's about finding that happy, healthy balance for yourself somewhere in the middle.
I think this goes back to the people pleasing concept, right? I think a lot of us course correct too much, and then we become, you know, maybe we had parents that weren't like the nicest to us, maybe, you know, they yelled at us, or, you know, they have their own stuff that they're working with, and then we become like super nice to everyone, and we become like that person that's always helping others, always listening to others, and then we neglect our own boundaries, our own like needs, because we want to be selfless, but then we become too nice to everyone, where, you know, you're saying yes all the time and you don't even have time for yourself.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's based on a need as well, but on what I would call a maladaptive need. So yeah, you may have had a relationship with your parents where it was never about you, and to in order to get your needs met, to get the attention, maybe you needed to get some love and affection or whatever it was, you then kept them happy all the time. You didn't want to step out of line because it was all about trying to get something from your parents which was more pleasant than what you would have got otherwise. And then we can grow up as people pleasers, and it becomes our primary need. So we get a need met by people pleasing, even though that need is maladaptive because it comes from an unhealthy space. And like you said, eventually we can't do that all the time, because then we don't have the ability to make ourselves feel better. There's nobody probably out there that we're meeting that are going to make us feel better either, because we're attracting a lot of people that like to take from us because we're happy to give. And then we just run out of steam. Generally, resentment is a good side of that. Why is it never about me? Them kind of questions. Why is it always about someone else? Nobody really cares. It's a very unhealthy space for us to end up in. And I know, because I was one of them.
It sounds like the personal, what's the profile you said, the influence support figures that are, that have this more often than maybe like the dominant drivers?
Yeah, so generally it's a steady type of personality type. So the S in the disc would be the people that are a bit more wanting everybody else to be happy. They're thinking about the bigger picture. So in a healthy way, that would be, okay, how do we make this work together? Whereas in a people pleaser way, it would be, how do I make everybody else happy without considering what I need in this and what's going to make me happy? So again, we need to see if that's a healthy behavior or an unhealthy behavior.
Yeah. I think, like you said, like everything in moderation, right? Everything, you know, as long as you have healthy boundaries, like, yes, like it's good to be the go-to. It's good to think about the family dynamics and the you know, reading the room and seeing, making sure everyone's happy, but only, you know, but not to the point where you're exhausted and, you know, every day you derive your value, your sense of worth in society and in the world from how many people, or maybe even the quantity of people that you're helping, versus the internal, like, okay, like I know I'm a kind, compassionate person, and yes, I'm not going to be able to solve like all of world's problems, but I'm doing my share to make the world better in my way.
Yeah. And I'm helping as many people as possible as I can, but I'm making sure that I did sort of do this. I think I made a little video about it some time ago, but it's about the jug. You know, if I've got a jug of water and I'm just going around filling up everybody's glass with water, and then I run out of water in my jug, where does my water come from? Is there anybody that's going to say, hang on a minute, have a bit of mine? Or have I got, I haven't got an unlimited reserve. So eventually, if I keep going around filling everybody else's glass up, I'm just going to run out of water and there'll be nothing left for me. As long as I keep some back for myself, or I've got things in my life which then replenish my jug, then I'll be a happy, fulfilled person. And I can keep kind of giving as much as I want to because I've got that stuff coming in that helps me to feel better. It's when we just keep giving and giving and giving without that ability to refill from ourselves is when we're going to really struggle.
And what advice would you give to people who maybe they're not as aware as what fills their cup, you know, because maybe their opinion of filling cup is always giving, but they don't realize, like, you know, because I think sometimes like people are like, oh, I'm not even sure what to do. Like, what can I do? It's a pandemic. It's not like I can like go out and like, you know, I feel like people always have, and I wouldn't say an excuse, like that's like a little harsh, but there's always a reason why you can't X, Y, Z.
Yeah, yeah. So like you said, it's the opposite, isn't it? It's, what can you do? What's within your control? What, you know, rather than focus on everything that's being taken from you or what you can't do, is okay, so what can I do? What can I do right now that's going to make me happy? If we don't have too many big goals, then we'll be okay. If we, everything is sort of external and everything is big, then obviously at this time, you know, there's not much you can do about it because everything that's external is out of reach. Everything that's probably really big is out of reach. So it's about thinking about what are the small things that make me happy. I mean, it doesn't mean we lose sight of what our big plans are. But okay, what can I do then? If I want to get to this space, if I want to feel this way, what can I do? And also I find a lot with my clients that come that are really struggling in that space is they don't know what they want. You know, if especially if they're people pleasers, it's always about I need to make other people happy. But even then, it's what you said right at the beginning about the law of attraction. You have an I want list, then your brain is more focused on finding the things that you want in your life. If you have an I don't want list, then your brain is always looking for things that you don't want. Therefore, all you find is everything that you don't want. So if you've got I can't sort of attitude and you keep saying, I can't do this, I can't do that, you'll keep finding reasons not to do it because you'll always not do it. But if you say, no, I can do this and I can do that because I want this result, this is what I want, then your brain will be like, okay, well, if that's what you want, let's try and go and find that for you. In neuro-linguistic programming or NLP, then we look at kind of the away from people and the towards people. So then we need to figure out, are you a certain type of person that likes to get a result because you're running away from pain? Or are you the type of person that likes to get a result because you're running towards pleasure? And then again, we need to figure out which one works for us. Is it the pain that motivates us to act, or is it the pleasure that motivates us to act? And we need to figure out which one we are, because then that will motivate us to do something.
Yeah, that's a good point. Having the awareness of which one you are is helpful, right? Because then, you know, when you have that awareness, you're able to like take action and maybe, yeah, because I do think to your point of like, I think a lot of people are very familiar with like what they don't like and what they don't want, but maybe they haven't spent as much time with what they actually want. It's always like focus on, well, I know I don't like that. I know I don't like that. But you know, if that's what you're seeking, then that's going to be more top of mind than perhaps the other way around.
Yeah, definitely. If you're not looking for what you want, you're only going to find what you don't want.
Because
that's what you're looking for. Your brain, there's a part of your brain called your reticular activating system, or your RAS. And that gets triggered whenever you're looking for something. So if I tell myself that I'm looking to avoid a toxic relationship, I don't want a toxic relationship ever again, my brain goes, okay, well, if you don't want a toxic relationship, I'm going to go and look for all those toxic relationships you can avoid.
Yeah.
And then all you keep seeing is toxic people, because that's all your brain's looking for. Well, I need to avoid that one. I need to avoid that one. But then if you've got a toxic relational pattern, your brain's going to keep finding all the things you're attracted to that you don't really want. But if you tell your brain that I want a healthy, happy, loving, caring, nurturing, supportive relationship, your brain will start looking for what it thinks is that instead.
Yeah, I remember there was a book called Cybernetics.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, he was a plastic surgeon, Dr. Maxwell Faltz, I believe, and he noticed that he would do all this plastic, like thousands of plastic surgery, right? But because they were so used to, their brain was so used to like, oh, I'm ugly. This plastic surgery essentially didn't do anything because they were always. So that's why he wrote the book. He realized like what you say to yourself is actually more important than the exterior, because if you view yourself as ugly, no amount of plastic surgery is really going to help, you know, even though on the outside, you know, you look great. So,
yeah. So in counseling terms, that's called your internal locus of evaluation. If we have a healthy internal evaluation, it doesn't matter what we look like outside, because we're happy with who we are as a whole. If everything that we look at, if we value ourselves from everything that's how other people are going to see us or feel about us, that's called your external evaluation. And if you're always looking for, I think it's Tony Robbins, he says something, he calls it significance. So if you're looking for significance all the time, then you're going to fall flat on your face, because you're not always going to be able to find something outside of you that makes you feel significant. It's about finding that on the inside that's going to make you truly happy. And then if you get some significance from the outside, then that's just the bonus.
Yeah, I think in Western society, we're so focused on the results, right? And then, you know, with like social media or things like it always is always like the highlights, right? So a lot of times we don't really take a step back and just process, like, just being here and now. It's always like, well, we need to get somewhere, we need to do something, we need to go to this vacation. So it's hard for us to really be more external, because the world, you know, you get a gold star, you get these awards, like, there's always external driven things that mm-hmm. that you're influenced by media and things like that.
Yeah, again, as a kid, what are you taught? You're taught to make other people happy, aren't you? If you do this, you get a gold star, you'll get a treat, you'll get this. But you need to conform to a certain behavior in order to get that result. You know, and then if you don't reach that result, you don't get your reward. And then you feel terrible, maybe feel like a failure or something. And then you grow up with the wrong kind of idea about what rewards are actually out there. It's something you're given.
Yeah.
Rather than actually how you're going to feel on the inside. No one praises you for something and says, how do you feel on the inside?
Yeah. Well, thank you, John. This has been a really insightful conversation. I'll put a link to your website and your YouTube videos and your content. This was very enlightening. And I think a lot of people, this will resonate with a lot of people. You know, I tend to, at LinkedIn, I tend to, you know, attract like a high achievers type of, you know, and then I would say part of our culture, I wouldn't say it's people pleasing, but there is a component of like being of service all the time. So I definitely think this will resonate with a lot of people. And yeah, I really appreciate you and the work that you're doing in the world to help us take control of our lives and be able to be proactive and intentional about the relationships we want versus being reactive and, you know, allowing external factors like control, like our lives. So I really appreciate you, John. Thanks for coming on. Well,
thank you for having me on the show. And it's been a great conversation. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.